Дакала мутна, чогось моя мила смутна, я не смутна, лен сердита, бо я зночі була бита. Я не смутна, лен сердита, бо я зночі була бита. Карі очі, ще й казала буде бити, щоб Іванка не любити, ще й казала буде бити, щоб Іванка не любити.
Чуєш, казала, казала буде бити, щоб Іванка, Іванка не любити. Чуєш, казала, казала буде бити, щоб Іванка, Іванка не любити.
А я Іванка так любую, де не стріну, там цілую. Ох, Іванку, серце моє, нема таких, як ми двоє. Ох, Іванку, серце моє, нема таких, як ми двоє.
Оксана Муха opening our program today with a song from her CD Решето, and that was Тече вода кала мутна. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння. При мікрофоні Павліна Макуарі, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Ми маємо дуже цікаві новини на сьогоднішній програмі. Hello there and welcome to Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio here on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. I'm Pavlina, your host. Thank you so much for joining me. We've got a great program lined up for you. Stefan Andrusiak with Rushnichok will be bringing us another Rushnichok story. Renata Hananets with Ukrainian Jewish Heritage is off this week, but we will have a commentary by her colleague Volodya Volkov on the political situation in Ukraine and Eastern Europe, and in fact Western Europe for that matter as well. And we will be speaking with Lydia Wolanski and a post-election analysis, and as well a book review with Myra Junik, and that is A Promise Kept by Andriy Semichuk. All that coming up, as well as our Proverb of the Week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And up next is Zubrivka from Toronto and their recent CD, their second, Vecherniці, and Te do mene ne chodi, Don't Come to Me.
Ти до мене не ходи, куцей коротенький, бо до мене ходить хлопець високий, тоненький. Понад сад виноград, а у саду грушка. Види, 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 ти до мене, моя щебетушка. Види, 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 ти до мене, моя щебетушка.
така гарна, чи мені здається?
Через тебе, моя мила, сон мій не береться.
Через тебе, моя мила, сон мій не береться.
Виноград,
а у саду сливка.
Вийди, 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 вийди ти до мене, моя чорнобрівка.
Вийди, 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 вийди ти до мене, моя чорнобрівка.
Ти до мене не ходи, не псуй собі ночі. Я за тебе не піду, бо мати не хоче. Перестань, перестань, до мене ходити. Є у мене гарний хлопець, буде м'я любити.
Є у мене гарний хлопець, буде м'я любити.
Thanks to the foresight and generosity of its donors, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been investing in the future of the Ukrainian-Canadian community for the past 50 years. Since 1963, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been funding initiatives that strengthen our Ukrainian-Canadian identity and enhance our Ukrainian-Canadian cultural heritage. These include fine and performing artists and arts groups, museums, cultural centers, education, as well as authors, journalists, and the Ukrainian-Canadian media, including this program. The foundation strives to become the premier not-for-profit foundation in a Canada which acknowledges the Ukrainian-Canadian community as a fundamental component of Canadian society. Nash Holis listeners are encouraged to support this vision through continued donations into the future. To apply for grants, make a donation, or for more information, contact the Shevchenko Foundation at 204-944-9128, toll-free 1-866-524-5314, or visit shevchenkofoundation.com.
Завзятій важкій боротьбі, ми поляж чем, що волю і славу, і честь рідний краю здобути тобі. Ми поляжем, що волю і славу, і честь рідний краю здобути тобі.
Добрий день. This is Volodymyr Valkov at the American-Ukrainian Bureau for Human Rights in Lviv, Ukraine, for Nash Holos, a Ukrainian Roots Radio. Russia is fueling radicalism in Europe. It is well known that reactionary political parties are on the rise across Europe. So far, this trend has been treated as minimal and temporary, as if there is nothing to worry about. But what effect will Russia's behavior have and the radically minded political forces in Europe? The annexation of Crimea and Russia's sponsorship of separatism and terrorism in eastern parts of Ukraine demonstrate that Russia has become an exporter of aggression and radicalism. Russian foreign policy and its behavior in Ukraine is inspiring further increase in the radicalization of Europe. While Russia is quick to accuse other countries of nationalism, it is precisely the one who is the most fertile breeding ground for extreme nationalism. Europe needs to take it very seriously. Crimea in itself is not a destabilizing factor for the security of Europe. It should be treated primarily as a symptom, an expression of the root cause of the real threat that is going to hit Europe soon. The name of this threat is Russian doctrine of greatness. It's Ruski Mir civilization, it's Eurasianism, it's messianic nationalism. The Political Capital Policy Research Institute, based in Budapest, issued a study that shows Russia's active involvement with the European far-right parties. We have already seen many cases of support emanating from the leaders of the European far-right parties toward Vladimir Putin. Bulgarian nationalist Ataka, or TAK party, headed by Volen Sidorov, participates in the interparliamentary cooperation with Russian Duma. Ataka's website proudly states that the party has launched its campaign for the European Parliament elections from Moscow. Hungarian nationalist Jobbik party has praised the Crimean referendum as the triumph of a community's self-determination. Marine Le Pen, head of France's far-right National Front, met with Sergei Naryshkin, Speaker of the Russian Duma, on April 12, 2014, declaring that she believes that Russia is being unfairly demonized by the EU. Moreover, representatives of such nationalist European parties like Hungary's Jobbik and Greece's Golden Dawn have been invited to participate in the Russian National Forum, to be held on October the 4th in St. Petersburg. All of this indicates that Russia is creating a network of nationalist and radical parties across Europe to undermine or even split up the European Union. This could be done either as a retaliation for the breakup of the Soviet Union, which Putin considers the greatest tragedy of the 20th century, or as a strategy to move forward Russia's own improbable creation, the Eurasian Union. Perhaps even both, regardless of the reasons we are witnessing as a dangerous civilizational struggle on the European continent, not merely a territorial conflict with Ukraine. The defining elements of Russia's struggle against the democratic world are radicalism, messianic nationalism, militarism, and revisionism. Russia is fueling the rise of Euroscepticism and radicalism across Europe in order for its own collective authoritarian model to succeed over the individualistic, democratic model of the West. The annexation of Crimea is a victorious symbol that will reinforce Europe's far-right parties, and Russia is a strong partner they can rely on to carry forward their agenda. Russia's actions in eastern parts of Ukraine are going to be seen by the radical political groups in Ukraine as a window of opportunity to advance their views with more vigor and determination. The results of the elections to the European Parliament, held from May 22nd to May 25th of this year, showed that many nationalist parties made substantial gains across Europe. Europe of Freedom and Democracy, the right-wing political group in the European Parliament, for example, back in 2009 won 31 seats in the European Parliament. in 2014 parliamentary elections to the European Parliament, the Europe of Freedom and Democracy won 38 seats. In Greece, for example, the Coalition of Radical Left won 26.6% of the national Greek vote in 2014, compared to 4.7% back in 2009. The extreme Greek right-wing political party called Golden Dawn won 9.38% of the national vote in Greece. Overall, radical parties in Europe increased their seats in 10 countries of the EU's 28 member states in the 2014 elections to the European Parliament. If Russia's project to fuel radicalism in Europe is effective, Putin's influence over the continent will strengthen, inviting a very dark future. This is Volodymyr Valkov for Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio.
and a contemporary rendition and reworking of John Lennon's classic Imagine by Ukrainian group Black Maloka. Here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, coming to you on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver.
This is Stefan Andrusiak from Rushnechok, and you're listening to Nash Holos with host Paulette Macquarie. Дорогі слухачі від всіх наших членів оркестри Рушничок, великий привіт вам! Ви слухаєте радіопередачу «Наш голос».
The nightingale produces more notes than any other songbird. And according to studies by the University of Bath in England and Cornell University in the United States, the bird's singing ability comes from its relatively complex brain. Oh, and one other thing. Females of the species prefer to mate with males who have the largest repertoire of notes and songs. Ukrainians may have known this. Perhaps that's why there are so many songs about the nightingale or the soloviy. Here are the opening lines to just three well-known songs, and we're just scratching the surface. There's the nightingale sings, Vit, 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 tioch, 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 ay, 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 och, och, och. Tam soloveiko щебетав. Call my girl for me, соловію, рідний брате, виклич мені дівча з хати, та гей. There's by the river Dunai, оюхаю при Дунаю, соловей щебече. The nightingale calls its loved ones back to its nest. I hear musicians playing in the distance. The bass resounds, the violin cries. There my lover dances, and a yearning fills me. All the while the nightingale calls its loved ones back to the nest. The song evokes home and hearth, the desire to have those you love near and whole and safe. As alluring as the resonance of that bass and the wailing of that violin may be, I want the nightingale's call to overpower them both, to bring those dancing far away home again. We first heard this song sung by Trio Marinich from Ukraine. It was introduced to us by a friend, Andriy Farmiga, near Passaic, New Jersey. Here from Rushnechok, Volume 5, by the River Dunai, Oy Uhayu Pri Dunayu.
Oy Uhayu Pri Dunayu, Solovey Щебече, Він же свою всю пташину до містечка кличе. Йох-йох, і тьох-тьох-тьох, Солоней Щебече. Пташину до гніздечка кличе. Тьох-тьох, і тьох-тьох-тьох, Соловей щебече. Він свою всю пташину до гніздечка кличе.
Плаче, милий, гуляє. Ой, Ухаю,
Check out more about Trio Marinich on YouTube. That's Trio Marinych. And you can find more Rushnichok stories and Rushnichok music on iTunes.
Дякую, Стефане. And here is Trio Marinich with traditional Ukrainian folk song, Несе Галя Воду.
Несе Галя Воду. Коромисло гнеться, за нею Іванко, як барвінок в'ється. За нею Іванко, як барвінок в'ється. Галю ж моя, Галю, дай води напиться, ти така хороша, дай хоч подивиться, ти така хороша, дай хоч подивиться.
Вода в садочку, той піти напися, я буду в садочку, прийди подивися, я буду в садочку, прийди подивися.
Прийшов у садочок, сосуля кувала, а ти ж мене, Галю, та й не шанувала, а ти ж мене, Галю, та й не шанувала.
Стелися в барвінку, буду поливати, вернися, Іванку, буду шанувати, вернися, Іванку.
Стелився, ти не поливала, скільки не вертався, ти не шанувала, скільки не вертався, ти не шанувала.
Слухайте українську радіопрограму «Наш голос» на багатомовній радіостанції AM 1320 CHMB у місті Ванкувері. On the line with me now is Lydia Walansky, and Lydia has been with us several times in the past to give us her excellent insight into events in Ukraine. Welcome, Lydia. Vitayu.
Oh, hi. Hi, Paulette. Good to hear you again.
Now, are you in Kyiv right now? Or are you back in Yaremcha, your home base?
I just got back to Yaremcha. I was in Kyiv for about a week, yeah.
Okay. So, momentous things have happened. The election, actually, Mr. Putin did not manage to scuttle it too much. And we have a pretty decisive outcome.
It's very impressive when you think that most of Donetsk and Luhansk was unable to vote. Only, I think, something like 13% or something like that of the population was able to vote there. And Crimea, of course, is out of the picture for the most part as well. So the 60% plus turnover that is mentioned actually is based on the entire voter list that normally would have participated in the election. So it means that the actual voter turnout, if you don't include the areas that simply couldn't vote, it was probably more like 70-75%, which is phenomenal for Ukraine. It's probably phenomenal for most democracies.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, what Canadians and Americans wouldn't give for that kind of a turnout, as well as any leader being elected with that size of majority.
Yeah, that was pretty much a landslide vote, no question about it. The thing about it is, and it's something that actually Simon Ostrowski pointed out when he did his last Vice report, is that for a lot of Ukrainians, this vote is not just a vote for a president, it's a vote for united Ukraine as a unitary country. So it was very important, and a lot of people, I think, understood that it was important for somebody to win in the first round because the country simply could not afford any more delays in having a proper president in place.
That in itself speaks to unity, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think so, definitely. And when you look at some of the videos taken of the voting process in Donetsk, it's actually very impressive because where it took place, it was extremely quiet. People were very upbeat. People were very happy to be able to cast their ballots. There was just a general feeling other than the fact that they actually are facing serious violence and the threat that some separatists will come along and actually start trying to shut down the voting process was always there. But the mood was not that different from, say, Kyiv, where I was at one of the polling stations, which is to say that people really felt like this meant a lot and they were really keen to cast their ballots.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the East, and I saw Simon's Vice report as well, Bullets Not Ballots in Donetsk. There is still quite a lot of violence going on, and it has come to light that they are foreigners, for the most part, that are causing the problems.
Well, I mean, the insurgency was started by foreigners in the first place. It was started by operatives coming in from Russia who were sneaking across Ukraine's border, which unfortunately has always been very porous with Russia because of the perpetuated Soviet concept that, we're brotherly nations and there's no reason to have a real border and to have visas and passport controls. The thing is that they seized Donetsk International Airport and they were beaten off by Ukraine's Air Force, actually. It was, they were attacked by airplane and by helicopter. And I think something like 40 of the I'm going to call them terrorists because these people are really not separatists. They're not people from Donetsk who've been looking to separate from Ukraine. It has nothing to do with that at all.
Right.
They are simply, you might call them mercenaries because I don't think they're doing it for free. And it turns out that a lot of them are actually Chechen fighters. A lot of people don't understand that in Chechnya, there are two groups of people. There are the original freedom fighters who wanted Chechnya, Donetsk, to be able to break away from Russia, which needless to say they were unable to do because Russia, of course, doesn't believe in referendums and certainly doesn't believe in freedom for people who are not part of the Russian whole anyway, and either historically, religiously, or any other way. But there are also Chechens that are basically working for the puppet government in Chechnya, which is run by Rustam Kadyrov, and they're often called Kadyrovites. Kadyrovtsi in Russian and Ukrainian. And a lot of the men that have been filtering into eastern Ukraine in the last while are these Kadyrovtsi. They are highly experienced, extremely well-equipped, and extremely gruesomely violent people. These are not just your ordinary soldier that has had some action in war here and there and is just simply prepared to do a good job fighting something off. These are people who will do far worse to their victims in terms of cruelty and torture than what was done even to some of the people that were killed in April in eastern Ukraine and were tortured in the process. So it doesn't bode well for the local population, that's for sure. However, as I said, probably about 40 of them were killed in this assault on the airport last Sunday. So fortunately, their ranks have been reduced by a few. Unfortunately, the Russian press has been trying to make it sound like those are mostly civilians, which is completely untrue.
Do you think they'll be those forces will be replenished, or it sounded like somebody has said that Putin blinked and he's backing off? Do you think so?
I haven't seen that. He's not the backing off type. I don't think that we can count on something like that. Yeah. What we can hope to do, or I think Ukraine can hope to do, is gradually shut down the border properly, although that's not easy to do when you don't have the necessary infrastructure in place, mm-hmm. and basically stanch the leak of Russian infiltrators across that border, because it's happening right now. And the other thing is, ever since Election Day, it seems like the anti-terrorist operation has really stepped up, and the Ukrainian side has been a lot more decisive in terms of dealing with these people. Prior to that, there had been a number of ambushes that were pathetic and should never have been allowed to happen if there had been proper scouting involved. There was even one incident where a small Ukrainian unit, the guys had actually gotten into some Horilka and were drunk when they were attacked, which is why most of them were killed, because they weren't in any condition to fight back until reinforcements came. So that kind of thing was really shockingly bad. And personally, I think they should have court-martialed the commander of that unit, if that's the case. But right now, the professionalism is starting to kick in, and you're starting to see much better equipped and much better trained people dealing with it on the Ukrainian side, which is both armed forces, like official armed forces, and also paramilitary groups that are officially working as support units to the armed forces, such as the Donbas Battalion.
So this coincidental improvement in Ukrainian defense, coincidental with the election that took place on Sunday of Petro Poroshenko, why? What is it? Why? Well, how is this man, this chocolate king, oligarch, is so inspiring?
Well, I think he represents a force for peace, for one thing, for many Ukrainians. I think that's one of the reasons they voted for him. I mean, there were a lot of things in his favor, despite many cynical remarks that I've seen about him. But basically, he's a lot more decisive than either Klitschko or Yatsenyuk, for instance, who are other potential candidates for the presidency. He's not stained with what I would almost call a hysterical and very kind of personality-oriented past like Yulia Tymoshenko. And he certainly can't be called a radical nationalist by any stretch of the imagination. So you have a man who has built up a very successful business that was not, for the most part, involving shorting the country by picking up cheap properties on the sly through privatization. It's a very quality business. It's really high-end in terms of quality product that his company makes. It's got a very good name in Ukraine. He also has had a lot of trouble with Russia because they don't like his positions, although, mm-hmm. as I said again, he's not hardly anything what you would call a radical nationalist. But he's enough pro-Ukrainian that Russia banned his products last summer when it started basically upping the ante against Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And it also shut down one of his factories in the last month or so in Russia. He had one factory that I believe was worth something like $70 million, and I think they shut him down.
Wow.
Probably for some trumped-up thing about, mm-hmm. That they're not holding up sanitary standards or whatever. It's easy enough to do in a country like Russia. Mm-hmm. So, he has no love lost for Russia. There's no question about that. And basically, he has run a successful business. He's been in politics as well for a very long time. He's worked with a lot of different people. Some people cynically see that as being that he's very opportunistic. He was actually the founder of two parties that were very seriously discredited over the last 15 years. But the interesting thing is that he left both of them very quickly after they were founded.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know the inside story there. I certainly wasn't a fly on the wall when it all happened, but my suspicion is that he may have thought that they were going to be normal parties that are not based on a personality, not the Bloc of Litvin or the Bloc of Yulia Tymoshenko or something like that, but that they would simply be some form of political party. One was with Medvedchuk, who's based in Zakarpattia, but who's extremely close to Putin, and is, I think he's actually godfather godfather to one of Putin's daughters, or maybe Putin's godfather to his child.
That's
I don't remember
close.
Which. But that's considered an extremely close relationship in Orthodox countries. Mm-hmm. It's almost even closer than being family in some ways, because it's a person you've chosen. Mm-hmm. So, and Medvedchuk has been really an odious political figure in Ukraine for about 15 years at this point. So I think that I'm assuming Poroshenko probably figured that out pretty quickly, and that was why he left the project, that it was going to be basically a project run by Medvedchuk for his own purposes. And I think the same thing probably happened with Party of the Regions, which was also probably like 12 years ago, or 10 or 12 years ago that it was founded. So in both cases, he was involved in them at the very beginning and then left them both very quickly, and then never really had much involvement with them, not on that level anymore. So he has a fair bit of experience in government. I wouldn't say he's white as a driven snow. Nobody is. Nobody can be under the circumstances. But he has the qualities that are necessary. He's decisive. He has a clear sense of what is needed for the country. He is a good manager. That's clear from running a business. He is able to get along with people across the political spectrum. Now, it doesn't mean that he's on good terms with him, therefore he is not to be trusted. I see that as simply as a guy who just knows how to, keep the necessary relationship on a practical level, mm-hmm. but not necessarily be close to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the final point is that he speaks very good English.
Yes.
This is a first for Ukraine to have a president that actually can speak good English. And I'm not talking about Klitschko's level. Klitschko's English is very poor. I'm talking about really normal, very sophisticated English.
Mm-hmm.
And he and Arseniy Yatsenyuk are the first politicians at any level in Ukraine who actually know the language, and they're not former KGB operatives, which is usually what it was during Soviet times, if you knew English, because you were involved in the KGB.
Yeah.
So that's a very, very positive thing, because, everybody from Yushchenko, Kuchma, Kravchuk, Tymoshenko, Yanukovych, all these people don't know any languages other than Ukrainian and Russian. So when they're in an international environment, they're completely dependent on interpreters to keep them in tune with what's going on. And, that's okay for a conference. It's not okay when you're sitting at a dinner talking to somebody or whatever, because so many things can get missed in the process.
Absolutely.
And you never know when a translator got something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So when you know the language, you can actually communicate to people at their level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will actually help raise perceptions about Ukraine abroad as well. I mean, it didn't help the way Ukraine was perceived when, on top of everything else, their leaders, none of them even knew English.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of comes across as a bumpkin country where people can't even be bothered learning an international language.
Right. I get a sense from what I've been following on the internet and seeing on the media is that the mood is quite upbeat and optimistic throughout the country. Except for the areas where there's unrest, but even still, Ukrainian spirit sure shows up. There, people are quite defiant against the separatists. Some of them are very brave.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of that in the last 6 months, and we're probably going to see a lot more of it yet because the soldiers are out there now, and the volunteer brigades trying to fight to restore order in the country.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going
to
ask.
It's going to be quite an uphill battle, really, to reintegrate eastern Ukraine into the country, or these two provinces at any rate, into the country on a permanent basis. I don't think that's going to be an easy job. But I think Putin completely miscalculated. He may have been given bad intelligence, which happens all the time with autocrats because the people around them are afraid to tell them something they don't really want to hear.
Right.
And that's typical, that autocrats tend to get more and more isolated from reality by their own inner circles because of that. I think he honestly thought that most of southern and eastern Ukraine was going to stand up and go to Russia with eager arms kind of thing. And instead, he's discovered that most of southern Ukraine certainly doesn't want to go there, and not all of eastern Ukraine does either. And maybe he just didn't, because Russia fixes polls a lot, So if when you're used to doing things a certain way and a certain underhanded way, you will tend to assume that everybody else does the same thing. So they may not have believed the polls in Ukraine that consistently showed that no more than 20-22% of mm-hmm. Eastern Ukrainians were at all in favor of Russia on any level.
Mm-hmm.
So he may not have believed that. He may have thought that was just a fix, that Kiev was paying for these polls in order to reassure itself that everything was okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I think he's discovered, unfortunately, that that was actually true. Now, the percentage may have moved up a little bit, you know, because there's always enough crazies and whatever kind of people who mm-hmm. will jump on any bandwagon or who just think the whole thing is very exciting, let's have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it's still under 30% of the population. So, you know, he hasn't got anybody he can really count on. He can only rely on violence now. And that's why I don't think he's blinked. I think he's just decided to up the ante. That's why you're seeing all these Kadyrovites coming in now, these mm-hmm. really nasty, highly experienced, extremely well-armed fighters mm-hmm. from the Caucasus, from Dagestan, from Chechnya.
So they're not out of the woods yet. Obviously, there's going to be more to this story. The Maidan issue may have been resolved, but they've still got now that they've taken care of their domestic problem. But now it's an international issue that they've got to take care of. So.
Well, I mean, the West has to understand. I mean, I think it's kind of really finally sinking into them the extent to which Russia has been responsible for all this. I mean, basically, mm-hmm. if Russia had not decided to invade Crimea, the bloodshed in Ukraine would have ended on February 20th.
Right. Yeah.
That would have been it. The 22nd, Yanukovych was gone, and that would have been the end of the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it didn't.
Yeah.
And even in terms of the Maidan, there is actually a lot more work to be done now because, you know, the what you might call the glamorous part was the Maidan. The nitty-gritty day-to-day work is what has to be done now, which is that ordinary Ukrainians have to remember that they can't just go back to business as usual
exactly.
and hope that somebody else takes care of cleaning up the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Poroshenko has to be controlled just as anybody else who would have been elected. Now, we have to make sure that this person actually does fulfill the promises of the Maidan, which is really start working on eliminating corruption, change the whole law enforcement system, revive the judiciary so that it's a normal, independent, functional system, clothe and feed the army so that it's not starving to death and running around with a bulletproof vest like it is in some cases right now.
Indeed.
There's a lot to be done.
And the
country's very poor.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine that you'll be continuing to report on events?
Oh, definitely. There's no reason to stop reporting right now. On the contrary, there's an awful lot of work ahead of us all.
Okay, well, you and I will stay in touch, and hopefully we'll get you back on the program again at some point in the near future. But meanwhile, people can follow you on Facebook and get your daily reports.
Yes, no problem. Thanks a lot, Paulette.
Thank you, Lydia.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Lydia Wolanski, a reporter, freelance reporter in Ukraine. You can follow her on Facebook. Just search for Rascal and Deer, or just follow me or the Nash Holos Facebook page, and you'll be able to connect with her there. Welcome to Knyzhka Corner, book reviews by Myra Junik, Ukrainian stories in English.
In this edition of Knyzhka Corner, we look at A Promise Kept, A Tribute to a Mother's Love by Andriy Symochuk. Andriy Symochuk's combination memoir, biography, and family history explores the life of his mother, Salomea Symochuk. As she journeys from Western Ukraine to Nazi Germany and later to Western Canada, readers will learn about the incredible strength of character of this extraordinary woman. In his introduction, Symochuk tells us, "What made her so remarkable to me was how she dealt with her normal daily life, especially given her difficult and limited circumstances." Salomea was born in 1911 in Pihaichi, but spent her childhood in Drohobych in Halicina, where her father Julian was a judge. She had two siblings, Helen, who was 2 years older, and Lasko, who was 2 years younger. As a child, Salomea contracted spinal meningitis and scarlet fever, which robbed her of her hearing. When the family moved to Lviv in 1928, they lived with famous opera singer Salomea Krushunitska, who was Salomea's aunt. However, World War II changes her life forever. Her brother Lasko is killed by the Soviets in the notorious Brigitsky prison. Forced to flee to the West at the end of the war, Salomea finds herself in Lehern Kaserne displaced persons camp in Salzburg, Austria, with her sister Helen. In 1947, she decides to become one of the first Ukrainian post-war immigrants to Canada. After a disastrous relationship in Alberta, Salomea finds herself alone, penniless, and pregnant. Her deafness and her inability to speak English compounds her desperate situation. Forced to endure incredible hardships after the birth of her son Andriy, Salomea eventually befriends William Samochuk in Edmonton, who later adopts her son. After William's death, Salomea faces an uncertain future. She relies heavily on her sister Helen, living in Los Angeles, to help raise her son. In her later years, Salomea finally reveals her full story to her son Andriy after a 50-year silence. The strength of Samochuk's book is the portrait of his mother. Her story of endurance and determination is both amazing and poignant. Through Salomea's story, readers will get a picture of Ukrainian life in Western Ukraine during both world wars. They will get a unique perspective on both Soviet and German occupation, as well as the challenges experienced by Ukrainian displaced persons after World War II. Readers whose relatives came to Canada during the post-war era will definitely be able to relate to Salomea's story. Caregivers for elderly parents will understand Andriy's challenges as his mother ages. There is a useful bibliography which provides sources for those readers who want to do research on their Ukrainian-Canadian cultural roots. This is Andriy Samochuk's first self-published narrative. Salomea is a very strong character in this work. However, the narrative lapses into lengthy historical explanations, autobiographical passages about Andriy's family life, and philosophical discussions. The text would have profited from more rigorous editing. Andriy Samochuk is an experienced Canadian and American immigration lawyer. He once worked as a United Nations correspondent whose articles were published in newspapers in Canada and the United States. Later, he spent many years as a lawyer in Edmonton and Los Angeles. He has also published The Young Professional, a real-world survival guide for the new college graduate. He lives with his family in Toronto. A Promise Kept, A Tribute to a Mother's Love, is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Thanks, Myra. Join us again soon for another edition of Konishka Corner, book reviews by Myra Junik, here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. Here's what's coming up this week in Vancouver's Ukrainian community. On Wednesdays, catch Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio broadcasting live from Nanaimo to North and Central Vancouver Island, the Gulf Islands, the Sunshine Coast, Washington State, and Greater Vancouver. Wednesdays from 12 to 1 p.m. on CHLY 101.7 FM, Radio Malaspina. This Friday, enjoy a pierogi supper at the Holy Trinity Ukrainian Orthodox Auditorium, 154 East 10th Avenue in Vancouver from 5 till 8 p.m. For details, call Holy Trinity Ukrainian Orthodox Parish at 604-274-8030 or visit uocvancouver.com.
Contact TV airs on Multicultural Channel Omni 1 and on Channel 8 on Shaw Cable Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. with a repeat broadcast the following Monday at noon. If you have announcements or story ideas you'd like aired on Contact, please email them at studio@contact.ca. That's studio@kontakt.ca. And at 5 p.m. Sunday evening, slip your radio dial right back here to AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver and join me for another hour of fun here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. In between broadcasts, you'll find upcoming events, program information, audio archives, podcast feeds, and much more at www.nashholos.com. Ну, дорогі слухачі, ми вже скінчили нашу програму сьогодні. Дякую, що рішили перебути з нами сьогодні. Пора напрощатися на ще один тиждень, але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Твоє лице говорить дуже багато про тебе. And our proverb of the week translates as the face is the mirror of the soul. Well, that just about wraps it up for Nash Holos today. Thank you so much for joining me to take us home. Prairie Crocus from Winnipeg from their CD Back Up and Push and Uncle Bill's Polka. I'm Pavlina Demchuk-McQuarrie on behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and AM 1320. Thanks for listening and Dobranich!